rabbis in the Talmudic times decreed that it be no higher than 20 cubits, which according to most authorities would give or take about 30 feet. So we've gone to the max that we can actually make a blessing and mention God's name during the celebration.
That's Rabbi Levi Shemtov. He's celebrating the lighting of the National Menorah in Washington, D.C., simply commenting on the fact that the menorah this year is as big as they can possibly make it, according to rabbinic law. The president then later was there at the lighting. He wished all the Jews in America and everyone else a happy Hanukkah. He said the miracle of this enduring light, remembered through the lighting of the menorah, continues to symbolize the triumph of faith over tyranny. We're going to be talking about Hanukkah during this 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Pastor Ed Balfour will join us here in just a moment. Then, to round off today's second hour, Dr. Ed Kettner will join us. The Supreme Court of Canada, we talked about this earlier with Dr. Montgomery, endorsed today gay marriage, saying that it was okay for the voters and the legislature in Canada to redefine marriage to include something other than a man and a woman. We'll get the Canadian perspective on that issue. He's Academic Dean of Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Dr. Ed Kettner will be with us then. In the third hour of the program, the last 25 minutes, Scarborough Country last night on MSNBC featured a roundtable. It was moderated by guest host Pat Buchanan, including Rabbi Shmuley Boteach. You probably have seen him on television. He's kind of the go-to rabbi for the Talking Head shows. Well, the question was, will Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ movie get an Oscar? Or should it? Or should Michael Moore get an Oscar for Fahrenheit 9/11? Well, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach said, no, Michael Moore should not get the Oscar, but neither should Mel Gibson. And we'll hear why he thinks The Passion of the Christ should not get an Oscar and what he thought about the movie in the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. today. Pastor Ed Balfour is a regular guest. He's a convert to Lutheranism from Orthodox Judaism, and he's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Pastor Balfour, welcome back.
You have to excuse me a second here. I'm in the middle of a dreidel game. We have a tradition here at the Balfour House during Hanukkah. We invite a bunch of goyim over. We tell them what all the letters on the dreidel mean, and I win every time.
It's great. Really?
Oh, yeah.
A rigged dreidel game.
It's a rigged dreidel game, and it takes place every year. I have a little dreidel. I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, then dreidel I shall play. Never mind. Go ahead. Spin, Sam. That's mine. Nun. Yeah, that's good. You lose. That's right.
Is this
for
money?
You guys go in the other room for a few minutes. We'll continue later.
Is this for money, Ed?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Ed, in spite of your levity, you've had a rough year physically. And before we get started on Hanukkah, tell us a little bit about your reflections on this last year for you in physical condition.
Well, since April, I've had three major operations. Had everything from very severe shoulder surgery to a colon resection for cancer, and right before I was supposed to start chemotherapy, I had a heart attack. So my wife and I had a problem last week in Portland. There was a walk for arthritis. There was one for diabetes, and I'm also a diabetic. There was one for cancer, and the problem we have when all these walks are going on, we don't know which one to go to, but we are sending in for all the T-shirts, so hopefully we don't have to go. So.
Well, it sounds as though, at least with the multiplicity of your problems so far, you would qualify for just about any of them.
Well, the bracelets are a problem. Wearing those, I'm a little guy, and all these bracelets really don't look that good on me.
All the way up your arm, the pink, the blue.
All the way up my arm, yeah. Sort of like as far as it'll go. Sort of like that menorah you were talking about. I've got it as far as I've got them on, but they're up to my elbow. So,
first of all, explain the lighting of the menorah to us as the now accepted symbol of this Festival of Lights, Hanukkah.
Well, you really have to go, if you're looking at Hanukkah, let's go back a little bit, even before that. If you go back in history, where does this holiday come from? And, you have to go back to Alexander the Great and before. Alexander's army reaches Jerusalem, and the Jews are already under Syrian occupation, and they don't resist. They want to go along to get along, and Hellenism really takes over the culture and all its beauty and all the other things that go along with Hellenism, but the Jews kind of find Hellenism to be compulsive in some ways. I mean, because the behavior that goes along with Hellenism includes infanticide, pedophilia, adultery, institutionalized prostitution, and on it goes. And through the centuries, you get past Alexander and Ptolemy, and then you get down to the Seleucid dynasty, and finally down to about 167 B.C. to Antiochus Epiphanes. And then there's a campaign to force the Jews to formally adopt the Greek practices. So led by Judas Maccabee, the most famous family of the Netanyahus, the Maccabees, fight a much more powerful army, the Greek armies. And on the 25th, I think it is, of Kislev, the Maccabees reclaim the Jewish temple. Now, the Talmud, you got to remember, the Talmud's the oral tradition of the Jews, but it holds sway over Scripture. And so they want to rededicate the temple. And they can't find, in the temple you have an eternal light that has to burn 24 hours a day. They can't find enough oil to light the menorah for it to burn more than a day. So in one temple chamber they find it's just a single bottle of oil, and they light it. And they ride out to get oil, and they don't come back for 8 days, and the legend, so to speak, goes that the menorah burned for 8 days. And so they consider it a miracle. So, and that's basically the lighting of the menorah.
Now,
do most people know this entire story? They kind of know the story of the super Jews, the Maccabees. That's about it.
How is Hanukkah then observed in the Orthodox Jewish family? As you were growing up Orthodox, how was it observed? What place did it have in the religious life?
Well, I think Hanukkah got bigger and bigger and bigger from my childhood to now because of Christmas, for competing with Christmas. It actually, it's not in the Torah, and so, it's just in one of the minor scrolls, again, in the Apocrypha, in the Jewish Apocrypha. And so what you have is a holiday that was mainly a kiddie holiday where very small gifts were given for the 8 days. A minor celebration at the synagogue, not a very big deal. Now it's become, a very big deal, and we hear it referred to as the Jewish Christmas. What, it has nothing to do with Christmas at all, obviously.
Well, let's talk about that. Then as a Christian, a convert to Lutheranism from Orthodox Judaism, would Hanukkah have any place in the religious life of a Christian? Aside from your rigged dreidel game there at the beginning of our conversation.
Excuse me, I got to spin again. Just 1 second. Would it have any place? I can't see that it has. I mean, if you say, does Passover have a place within the Christian calendar? Well certainly, we can look at Passover and we can examine it as the Lord's Supper, and we can, we can overlay it on Monday, Thursday. But you'd be hard pressed to find any relation to Hanukkah. I mean, what does Hanukkah have to do with most anything except even in Judaism, other than social practices when you get down to it?
So
they did not want to lead this kind of life that the Hellenistic community was going to force them into.
So it's really a story that is more fitting in the whole notion of intertestamental Jewish nationalism and fighting the oppressors in Palestine than with any religious significance per se.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just never included Hanukkah in the Torah. Instead, it's written down in two works that are known. One's known as the Book of Maccabees, and one's written in Greek and the other's written in Hebrew. Both survive in translation, but they're minor books. There's also a medieval work that has something to do with it, and it's kind of modeled after the Scroll of Esther, which, again, if you look at that the Book of Esther, Jews look at this book in the same way, a scroll not to be read in the temple, even in old, but to be read in a synagogue, in a place of learning. Not necessarily true. I mean, Jews look at this, somewhat as myth. even though it's in the Talmud, which is considered to be authoritative. So, I mean, it's very hard to figure out.
So Jews generally will view the whole Maccabean story as not so much suspect, but didn't necessarily have to happen just that way.
No, but it's one of these holidays where kids really have a good time. They get chocolate, money, Hanukkah gelt. They dress up as they might play Maccabees, you know, and they certainly play dreidel. They play it for candy, you know. They play it for Hanukkah gelt. And I always think it's good to teach your children early how to gamble, so they'll be well versed and well rounded.
So the whole dreidel thing, you do have to explain that to me, because I remember running across one once when I was learning.
You want to come over and play?
I'd be happy to if you have me up
sure,
there.
Sure, I'll show you my rules.
Well, the Balfour rules.
The Balfour rules, not a problem.
I remember coming across a dreidel when I was learning Hebrew in seminary and being kind of fascinated with the fact that it had some Hebrew letters there on this little wooden top. What is that all about?
Well, it actually is a gambling game. Everybody starts out with about 20 objects, whatever it is. You have a nun. It stands for actually nicht, or nothing, in English. So if the dreidel lands on nun, you don't do anything. Gimel stands for ganz or all. So if the dreidel lands on gimel, you take the whole pot. Hay stands for halb or half. So if the dreidel lands on hay, you take half of what's in the middle. Plus, if there's any odd number of objects, and then there's shin. Hebrew letter shin stands for shittel or put in. So if the dreidel lands on shin, you put two objects in the middle. And if you're playing by my rules, if it comes up on any of these and you're a Gentile, I get all the pot. That's the way it works in my house.
That's a shame. What about a convert to Lutheranism? Does that...
Not going to cut it here. We're going to take your money.
All right. I saw a holiday season's greeting from Channel 4 kind of a thing on television the other night. And what they had was this season of light. So the first thing they showed was the Christmas tree, and then they panned from the Christmas tree over to the menorah, and then they kept panning to a depiction of a star, not so much a manger scene, but kind of a star over a nondescript building. So there was no real birth story being told there, and it was just kind of plugged as season's greetings in this season of light, drawing an equivalency, it seemed, between Christmas and Hanukkah.
Well, if you're going to take Christ out of Christmas, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the parade of sparkle or holiday or whatever we're calling it, it certainly becomes comparable to what Jews are doing with Hanukkah today, because Hanukkah, again, today is not what Hanukkah was. It's become a major event to compete with Christmas in a commercial sense. And so, you know, it's very interesting here, even up in Maine. You can't have creche displays on public property, but there are menorahs all over the place, and we probably have, you know, I'm probably one of the four Jews in Portland. So it's an interesting concept. It's almost, again, it's kind of pandering. It's like Kwanzaa. We have Kwanzaa displays up here, a holiday that's absolutely phony and made up by a communist, no less. But, you know, we have happy Kwanzaa on our TV. What does that mean? I have no idea. And it's very hard to associate today as an adult with the things you see for Hanukkah on TV. There wouldn't have been even happy, I mean, Jews of my day, Orthodox Jews, wouldn't have wanted to see happy Hanukkah on the TV. It's okay to have the Christmas stuff, but that's what Gentiles do. We don't want to commercialize. Even as minor a holiday as it was, Jews wouldn't want to commercialize Hanukkah in my days the way it is now.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. We're talking with Pastor Ed Balfour about Hanukkah. He's a convert to Lutheranism from Orthodox Judaism and pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Now, if you have a question or a comment, feel free to give us a call at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. So we were coming out of a Chinese restaurant. Here's the melting pot for you, Ed. We were coming out of a Chinese restaurant the other night, and on the door of the Chinese restaurant, on the inside of the door, was just a kind of a Xerox copy of a picture of a menorah, and it kind of handwritten there in Sharpie, Happy Hanukkah. My son, who's 8 years old, says, "What's Hanukkah?" And I gave him the briefest of explanations of Hanukkah. And my daughter, who's 13, said, "Well, can we celebrate it since we're Christians?" Do we have anything to do with that? And I kind of thought to myself, you know, we're not going to be celebrating it, but it's a good question. How would you respond?
I would say, you know, I don't see what there is to celebrate for Christians. I mean, there doesn't seem to be anything that we can read into what we believe. And Jews, again, have that same problem. So, it's a minor holiday for Jews. How could it possibly fit into anything we believe? I mean, it doesn't really fit in much as to what Judaism is about and what it believes, other than trying to say that this, that the tradition or the law that says that the eternal light has to burn is a law of God, and God performs miracles. So, you know, in that time, that light burned for all that time. So I don't know. You know, menorahs are interesting because although, you know, it's a minor holiday, you've got 8 candles. You light 1 the first night and 2 the second night. And as minor as this holiday is, the menorah itself is a very strict law of how it's to be organized. It's supposed to have 8 candles that are exactly the same height. And then you've got a 9th one that's called the shamus that you use to light the other candles with. The shamus isn't holy, but the other candles are holy, like for a Sabbath. And so once the menorah is lit, until it burns out, you can't move it. So in one sense, I'm telling you it's a very minor holiday. In the other sense, I'm going to tell you that it's also considered a Sabbath, a minor Sabbath. So it's, you know, hard to figure.
Tell us about your journey from Hanukkah to Christmas, from the lights of Hanukkah, dubious origins in this intertestamental period, to the light of Jesus Christ.
Well, not even trying to be humorous here, but you know, when you say from the light of the menorah to the light of Jesus Christ, all I can think of is that I always liked you guys. I liked your lights better. You know, it's nice to turn on and see a big tree in Rockefeller Center, and then I had this little bitty menorah, home menorah, and I always thought you guys got the best of the deal that we had this little minor holiday, and then here is this big holiday represented by all these trees, and never thought of it until really coming into Christianity that, you know, in many ways, you know, the holiday, the holy day, the Christ Mass itself has to do with trees that, I always call them trees that are going to be made into crosses, you know, and the sacrifice that's made for us. And so it's starkly different because in one sense we were kind of playing in here. I find the season of Advent for me to be an incredibly reflective season, especially this year, a very penitential season, just like Lent. It's identical to Lent for me. And then the culmination, sometimes I don't even find Christmas to be, I want to say, not a lot of hoopla in my house because, you know, we realize in our church here, we celebrate Christ's birth unto his death unto life again. And so for me, Christmas can be is a very solemn holiday, a very holy day because of what it represents. And so sometimes when being a convert, when I see some of the neglect of realizing what Christmas actually buys for us, not all the frivolity and gifts and whatnot, but what it actually buys for us, I think converts have a tendency to lose patience with lifelong Christians or lifelong Lutherans and their neglect of the holiness.
Laying aside any political considerations here, if we can,
I'm a Republican.
Okay. Well, we started our conversation talking about the lighting of the menorah, and it has been the president's practice since he took office the first term to have a menorah in the White House very prominently displayed, yeah, and to do a public ceremony of the lighting of this. And he wishes all the Jewish Americans a happy Hanukkah, and then he, yeah, wishes all the rest of us Christmas, and who knows, maybe they even have a Kwanzaa display there that they put up. Aside from the political considerations, what does it say about American culture where these things are all just viewed as kind of different ethnic roots, but all essentially the same? We're all kind of just celebrating the season.
Well, I guess what it says, Todd, is that most people don't have a clue. I mean, they're clueless as to what's going on. And when I hear, for instance, just from the little background I've given you on the menorah, I would ask you, is the menorah a religious item? You know, you're talking about what's displayed in the White House. You've got a menorah and a Christmas tree. How about a menorah and a crucifix? Would that go? I don't think it would go because, you know, the crucifix is definitely a religious article, and yet we're saying the menorah is not. And yet, when I even give you the little brief history of the menorah, I guess you've got to see it as a religious article. If it's not a religious article, then why are they in synagogues all over the world? And to me, again, by saying this happy holidays and having all this display of multiplicity of different things, I think the answer is people don't have a clue.
So what makes Christmas different? Explain that to our listeners, especially, and I'm thinking about those who say, I like all that kind of Jewish stuff, and I like all the Hanukkah stuff, too. What makes Christmas different?
What makes Christmas different? Yeah, I think that in some ways for the world today, Christmas is no different because people are celebrating Christmas sans any religion, and that's the way why people like to dress up in Jewish stuff. It's kind of a dress-up for the holidays. And, you know, the jokes are made about the dreidel, and you're not knowing what's on there, and you don't know the Jewish letters. I mean, we have people today praying in these Messianic temples. They don't have a clue either. They just like to dress up, be part of the culture. And it feels good, sounds good, and makes them happy. Christmas, as I said, may be joyous in a lot of ways, but Christmas doesn't always, if you get down to the meaning of what it's truly about, won't necessarily make you happy. It might make you joyful, but to think about why Jesus was born and the trek all the way through the Passion, you don't exactly come out slappy, happy, and feeling good. But if you want to play dress up and you want to put all the different, all the little decorations around, you can have a great time without actually celebrating anything except happy holidays.
Finally, Ed, you're quite a big shot in our church body, Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. You're on the board of directors.
Holy smokes, I am.
Yes. Just to remind you, do you have any future aspirations?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. You know, for 150 years, I guess there were no Jews on the board of directors. Are you aware there are two now?
I was just told that the other day.
Yeah, there are two, and I think maybe we ought to start things by having quotas. I really did enjoy being the only Jew on there, but any future aspirations? Well, it would be good to be the first Jewish president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I think I could get the entire Jewish vote. Our people seem to vote in a block, so I think I could manage.
You might even get some crossovers, too.
Might even get some crossover people, which would be just great. We want to be a church, you know, that has a tent that's big enough for everybody. And after all, with the menorah, I'm going to light my menorah tonight to be part of the Senate. We're going to call it Menorah Ablaze.
You know? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Pastor Ed Balfour, thank you for being our guest.
God's blessings to you of this holy season. And Todd, you do a wonderful job on your show, and we certainly appreciate the information that comes out, and it's certainly a witness to our world. God be with you.
And with you as well, and thank you for your kind words. Pastor Ed Balfour is a convert to Lutheranism from Orthodox Judaism, and he's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend the next 25 minutes and the remainder of this second hour talking about the Supreme Court of Canada's endorsement of gay marriage. We're going to get the Canadian perspective on this story from the Academic Dean of Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, Dr. Ed Kettner. Now, we'll revisit that story, find out what this will mean. You know, they're saying churches will not be forced to perform any of these unions if they become legal in Canada. I wonder if Dr. Kettner is still concerned. We'll find out after this.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
A Christmas tree, a wooden manger, a wooden cross. It's an arboreal theme that followed Jesus throughout his time on earth. And this theme is the focus of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for December, titled A Tree for Christmas. It's written by popular Christian author Dandy Daly McCall. Just visit our website, issuesetc.org, for more information, or call Concordia Publishing House at 1-800-325-3040. A Tree for Christmas costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040. Gather your children and grandchildren around the Christmas tree this year and read A Tree for Christmas. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. What's the relationship between a Christmas tree and the Tree of Life? Find out with A Tree for Christmas, our Issues, Etc. book of the month for December. 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. It's received almost no attention from the mainstream media, but an important pro-family resolution passed through the United Nations General Assembly this week. In fact, the traditional family concept of man, wife, and children had a good couple of days in the world community. Terry Phillips reports.
The UN resolution coincides with the 10th anniversary of the International Year of the Family. It supports traditional marriage and recognizes the importance of more than 100 pro-family conferences held this year. Thomas Jacobson is focused on the family's representative to the UN.
This marks a change in the direction of policy at the United Nations, re-embracing the family as a fundamental unit of society.
The resolution came just days after the International Conference on the Family also endorsed the traditional family of mom, dad, and children. Dr. David Papineau of the Marriage Project on that outcome in Doha, Qatar.
It calls for support of the nuclear family as the fundamental and natural group unit of society, and the importance of trying to preserve and reclaim the family as much as we can.
Jacobson says the basis of opposition to the UN's turnaround resolution was simple.
It contained the terms husband and wife and did not contain phrases which are code words at the UN to try to incorporate same-sex unions into the term family.
The pro-family language was adopted, but Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and European Union nations disassociated themselves from the decision. For Family News and Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
Observers of UN policies claim a 25-year trend away from support for traditional families. This pro-family resolution has no force of law, and governments can disregard the details. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On the next Focus on the Family.
All the close calls I had in life, including, you know, getting my throat cut, all the times I escaped and evaded death, it was the Lord's hand of mercy on my life because he knew there'd be a day when I would come to him.
Dr. Bill Meyer continues his conversation with convicted, converted serial killer David Berkowitz. It's a broadcast from mature audiences. Next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO. What's the relationship between a Christmas tree and the tree of Calvary? Issues Etc. and Concordia Publishing House are pleased to offer a children's book this month. It's titled A Tree for Christmas. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House at 1-800-325-3040, or you can read a synopsis of A Tree for Christmas under the What's New section of our website at issuesetc.org. Looking for a stocking stuffer? How about a tree for Christmas?
Okay, we were talking about Hanukkah and contrasting a bit with Christmas there in the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. It brought to mind, as is natural, our Issues Etc. book of the month for December. It's called A Tree for Christmas. Now, this is a children's book that is beautifully illustrated. And unlike so many children's books for Christmas, this one actually gets you not only from the manger, it also gets you to the cross. Now, it traces the theme of wood and trees through the life, the ministry, the death, and the resurrection of our Savior Jesus Christ for this Christmas season for your children. The book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling, and you can order it by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. 25 minutes left to do that right now. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can go to our website and find out more about the Issues Etc. book of the month for December, A Tree for Christmas, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. The story that we dealt with early in today's program, we're going to revisit now for the next 25 minutes. Dr. Ed Kettner is our guest. He's academic dean of Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Edmonton, Alberta. We're going to get a Canadian and a theological perspective on the decision of the Supreme Court of Canada to endorse gay marriage today. Dr. Kettner, welcome.
Thank you, Todd. Nice to be back.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment. Dr. Kettner, first of all, how do you gauge the general reaction in Canada to this Supreme Court decision today?
Very difficult. I've been holed up in the classroom most of the day, so I haven't had my finger on the pulse of the Canadian response yet. I've just looked up one website here, one of the news agencies. And I find it very intriguing that the Supreme Court actually did not endorse gay marriage. What they did was they said Parliament has the right to legislate it, but they explicitly refused to uphold the other court's decisions, which de facto legalized it in various provinces.
So what the Supreme Court did was essentially say the proper place for this issue to be decided, without reference of how it ought to be decided, is in the Parliament itself.
That's what the decision says. I'm just looking at the four questions that had been presented to the court for answer. The final question, the fourth one, was, is the traditional definition of marriage between a man and a woman constitutional? And the various courts, BC, Ontario, and Manitoba, Nova Scotia, and Yukon, all said that it wasn't. But the Supreme Court said the court exercises its discretion not to answer this question. And the question that it does answer are, does the Parliament have the exclusive legislative authority to change the legal definition of marriage? The answer to that is yes, Parliament does have that authority. Next question, is extending the capacity to marry persons of the same sex consistent with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? The court says, yes, it is. The third is, are religious leaders protected under the Charter of Rights from having to marry same-sex couples? The answer there is yes, we are protected from that and do not have to do it. So that was an important part of the court's decision as well.
Well, now at this point, I'm wondering, and based upon an earlier conversation we had when the issue of hate crime legislation was the topic, and we were talking about whether or not people from the pulpits, pastors from pulpits of churches, could be found guilty of hate crimes if they said what Scripture has to say about the nature of homosexuality and it as a sin. Are you, all your fears allayed here with the court saying, okay, the churches, we're going to maintain the church's freedom to do or not to do these unions?
Well, I'm rejoicing in that, but I didn't expect anything like that to happen because in Canada, as in the States, nobody requires. There is no law requiring anybody to marry anybody else from the church. Now, justices of the peace, for example, or in Canada, marriage commissioners are going to be bound by this, and they're not going to have a choice. But clergy are, obviously.
What is the...
Once the law comes into effect, and judging from the news sources here, our prime minister has said that this is going to be coming before Parliament in the new year. They've got the legislation almost ready to go. It's also interesting to note that under the just a little bit of background in our parliamentary system, normally you've got a party whip who literally wields that and says you toe the party line so that a position of the party has to be voted on by every member of the party, or else they can undergo discipline, be removed from a cabinet position, or disciplined in some way or another. In this particular case, he says the cabinet members are going to have to vote in favor of the party line, but it's going to be for the so-called backbenchers who don't hold any of the cabinet portfolios. They are going to be able to vote their conscience. So there is going to be somewhat of a free vote there, which is going to make things a little bit interesting, I think.
Well, why do you think that the whip of the respective parties, why do you think that this is, this exception is being made on this issue?
Well, I think it's going to be done simply because they're going to try to make this look like as much of a democratic procedure as possible. So I find it interesting that the leader of the Conservative Party called this court victory a huge victory for the Conservative position, in that the courts did not, by declaration, say you must come up with legislation which mandates marriage as between two people, regardless of whether they're of opposite sex or same sex. So that in itself, I think, is interesting. In a way, the court is trying to, try to take the heat off itself, and because they know where Parliament's going to go. Parliament is going to legalize it, and they want the heat to be put on Parliament and not on themselves.
Now,
this way also they were able to present a unanimous front because the ruling came out as a 9-0 ruling.
So from beginning to end, this really is an attempt for everyone involved, including the parties, the Supreme Court, to be able to say when gay marriage is actually legalized by the Parliament in Canada, hey, will of the people. Will of the people.
Exactly, exactly. Which means it's up to the people now, and there's still a very strong contingent in Canada who are opposed to the whole thing. It's up to them to start putting pressure on their members of Parliament to vote to scuttle this whole thing. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not optimistic at all in that regard. But at least there's going to be the opportunity to put some pressure on our members of Parliament.
I'm wondering, we talked earlier today with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, and he gave his opinion after having lived for the better part of a decade in Canada and been a professor of history at one of the universities there. He said, you know, the Canadians are of a real mixed mind. They don't know whether they want to be Americans or Europeans or Canadians.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what makes Canada different, because we usually just regard it as our northern neighbor, just like us, except on the other side of the border. But it seems, on a lot of these issues, very different in a lot of ways. Why?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm going to try to bring in Reginald Bibby, who is a sociologist of religion from the University of Lethbridge here in Alberta. And he's put out a very recent book, which the name of it escapes me at the moment. But he says, actually, when it comes to religion, even though Canada seems to be more secular than the States, we're actually more closer to the States than we are to Europe at the moment in a lot of these things. In terms of what we call traditional morality, things unfortunately are a bit worse here. Just looking at the Edmonton Journal for this morning, I just took a look at this when I found out that I was going to be talking to you, showing that in a lot of these areas of sexual ethics, Canadians are unfortunately more quote-unquote liberal, let's call it immoral, than in their understanding than in the States. So it says here, surveys show 60% of Americans and about 80% of Canadians think sex between an unmarried man and woman is morally acceptable, which flipped on its head means that 20% of Canadians and 30% of Americans surveyed consider it morally wrong. So even when you're talking sex outside of marriage, in both United States and Canada, the majority of people have abandoned traditional morality in that regard, and it's a bit worse in Canada. 20%, only 20% hold a traditional position in Canada, but only 36% do in the States. So things aren't all that great in this regard in either place. And, of course, in Europe, it's far, far worse than that.
How concerned are the lay people that you talk to in Canada about this issue of gay marriage?
It's not really up for discussion all that much here. I think they think that whatever the courts decide, the church has its position, and the church is going to hold to its position no matter what. That is in fact as it should be. I would really be worried if the courts had said that one, gay marriage is the law of the land, and two, therefore, any clergy must marry anyone, regardless of sexual orientation, who comes before them in order to get married. But they have not done that. Had that been the case, then I think the obligation would have been for all clergy to turn in their marriage licenses and say, we aren't going to marry anybody. We will only solemnize, bless marriages of Christians. Which would be, if worse comes to worse, would be a legitimate option. But fortunately, it's pretty clear that we're not at that point yet.
And I know how it works in the United States. There is a simple kind of unsigned agreement that the clergy, that duly ordained clergy of properly incorporated congregations do have legal authority to sign off on marriage licenses
Right.
and witness civil marriages, even at the same time while they're blessing them in the course of a marriage liturgy. How does it work in Canada with the clergy there?
It's very much the same. We are licensed through our denominations by the province, and so I've got a marriage license number. Being an ordained clergyman, I can solemnize marriages in Alberta. In some provinces, I think Ontario, for example, you have to actually be the pastor of a congregation. But simply being an ordained clergyman gives you the right in Alberta. And it's still the right to decide whom you are going to marry. You don't have to marry anybody that comes before you and wants it, which is the way, of course, that it's always been and is in the case of the states, too.
We're talking about the Canadian Supreme Court's decision today to turn the issue of gay marriage over to the Canadian Parliament for their decision and the likelihood of gay marriage being legalized through Parliament in Canada. Our guest is Dr. Ed Kettner. He is Academic Dean of Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Kettner, how do you plan to discuss this in the seminary class?
Basically, this comes up in the Christian ethics class for the most part. It certainly does. Well, in dealing with creation, it comes up in the discussion about the nature of being made male and female. It comes up in ethics class when we're dealing with social ethics and policy. I'm in the process of preparing a four-week class for laity that's going to be coming up in January and February, dealing with what I'm calling Christian ethics in a multicultural society. And this is, of course, going to be one of the hot-button topics for that as well. But what we simply do is recognize that we are bound by the law of God, not by the laws of society. And where society allows for something that the church doesn't allow for, we go with what God says. And if it would come to a point where the society presents laws which force us to be to go contrary to God's law, then we would have no choice but to engage in civil disobedience and obey God rather than man.
Are there other denominations? I know that in the American context, I can point to the United Church of Christ, I can point to the United Methodist Church, I can point to the Episcopal Church USA, the Presbyterian Church USA, and a couple other minor ones. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, where it is not unusual at all for same-sex marriages or unions, as the case may be,
or
to be blessed.
The blessing of unions of some sort, yeah.
Are there denominations in Canada that are doing the same thing?
Most certainly. The most prominent one, universally, I guess, all throughout the country, is the United Church of Canada, which is not quite the same as the United Church of Christ. There were a number of different bodies that combined in Canada to form the United Church of Canada. They have basically gone the route of anything goes there. If a clergy person, because they do ordain women as well, desires to solemnize or bless a union of two members of the same sex, they can do that. Up until now, depending on the jurisdiction, of course, they couldn't call it marriage because their marriage is governed by the state. But they can say that this is in some way blessed by God. In the Anglican Church, particularly in British Columbia, in the Vancouver area, the Bishop of New Westminster has been trying to demand that the churches under his jurisdiction perform such things, and that's created a bit of a, here we would call it a kerfuffle, between the bishop and some of the congregations that he serves who have accused him of basically of apostasy and have been trying to place themselves under an entirely different bishop as a result of his demands that same-sex marriage be, or the same-sex unions be considered to be on a par with marriage. So there have been those things going on there, and those have been the most prominent areas, places where these things have been going on. And of course, a lot of pastors in various churches act as lone rangers and do their own thing. But at least up to a year ago, a year and a half ago, when all of these court decisions started coming down, they had no legal status. Now these things are going to begin to have legal status. And when Parliament makes its decision next year, and the expectation is that the legalization of same-sex marriages will pass by a slim majority, but it will pass, then these things will be basically considered marriage. One of the most frightening things, incidentally, is that the Canadian Oxford Dictionary has already changed the definition of marriage de facto. It now calls marriage, defines marriage in the dictionary as a union between two people, and omits the male and female thing, which was in there before.
That's very interesting, very interesting. I wonder if that change is coming in U.S. editions of dictionaries.
Oh, I have no doubt that it will be. And what's especially disturbing is that there is no reference made whatsoever that up until 2 years ago, that was never even considered the definition of marriage. The old definition isn't even mentioned anymore.
Charlie is calling from his car, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Charlie, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Pastor. I just wanted to ask, I've got a friend living in Canada, and I was very curious because I always thought that the Canadians had more of a moral society than they apparently do. What causes their shift away from the basic Christian moral moorings to what seems to be more of a secular society now?
Charlie, thank you very much. Dr. Kettner.
Well, I have to say, first of all, that I'm an immigrant to Canada myself. I've been here for almost 20 years now. And things have changed, I think, drastically during the 20 years that I've been here. And a lot of it is, if you want to talk about blame, the blame is laid with the so-called Charter of Rights and Freedoms that came into being when the Canadian Constitution actually was called, repatriated, that is, given over to Canada from England. And with a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the Supreme Court of Canada and the other courts have been doing things very, very quickly, very much the same way that in recent years the U.S. Supreme Court has been doing in judicial review, saying that such and such actions violate the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, doing very much very much reading into the Charter of Rights and Freedoms things that probably were never intended to be put there by the original writers of it, much like their the abortion right was read into the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution in spite of the fact that the people that prepared it never remotely considered that it would be used for that. And so we have, over the last 20 to 30 years in Canada, it seems, a very radical shift from a very Christian-oriented culture. When we moved here 20 years ago, mid-1980s, you would still have Christian Christmas programs going on in the public schools. That's pretty well gone by the boards now here as well. So just this last generation has shown this this radical shift, and it has been disturbing to a lot of us.
Then with only 30 seconds, and finally, Dr. Kettner, with that quick shift, are you bracing yourself for more quick shifts toward this, Bork has called in the American context, a slouch toward Gomorrah?
I would not be I'm wondering exactly what's going to happen. You never do know how this pendulum might swing in a society, and there may end up being a backlash to this whole moral relativism when people see exactly what it's going to be doing to culture. But I think that backlash is going to take a while to foment itself, and maybe another generation before things start righting itself. If God is good to us, there is going to at some point be a backlash. And we pray that is going to happen. The people are going to come to their senses and realize that natural law is in fact to govern our behavior and not ourselves being the measure of all things.
Dr. Ed Kettner is Academic Dean of Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Thank you for being our guest.
My privilege.
By the way, speaking of another great seminary, Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, a bit south from Alberta, Canada, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, They are an underwriter, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, of Issues, etc. And we invite you to join us as we broadcast live at the 2005 Symposia Series at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's January the 18th through the 21st there on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find out who's speaking there over this three-day event. You will find out how to register. You will find out about housing. You'll find out everything you need to know. And we will be there as well, broadcasting live January the 18th through the 21st on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Almost 1,000 lay people and pastors will be there too, and many of the guests that you hear here on Issues, etc. Not only the faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary, but many of the guests. Heck, you might even run into Eddie Balfour there or any of the others. They come from all over the world. It's really a tremendous event. January the 18th through the 21st, and go to our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section for all the information you need on the 2005 Symposia Series at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend the last 25 minutes listening to a roundtable. Well, actually, one of the roundtable participants at a recent Scarborough Country. This was last night's program on MSNBC. The roundtable was discussing the issue of a Oscar for Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. All right. And it began with, and one of the participants is Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, very outspoken Jewish rabbi. He didn't think that there should be an Oscar for The Passion of the Christ. Pat Buchanan, who is sitting in for Joseph Scarborough, began with this question for the rabbi.
Rabbi, there were predictions by folks at the ADL and everywhere that this was going to cause horrible reactions, that Jewish folks are going to get beat up, that would breed hostility and anti-Semitism. Despite the fact that literally tens of millions of people saw this movie, it appears to have moved some criminals to come in and to confess. I don't know a single incidence of violence as a consequence of this film. Were the folks that predicted violence and everything, were they not dead wrong?
Pat, every day Al Jazeera portrays American troops as SS Gestapo. That doesn't lead to attacks against Americans on U.S. soil, but that doesn't justify it either.
You compare it.
Wait, let me answer you. You have to let me answer you.
You compare it to Al Jazeera?
No, I am making a very simple point. Slander is slander, whether it leads to violence or not. The Passion of the Christ was a historically fictitious, deeply libelous and slanderous movie portraying Jews killing one of their own. Jesus was an Orthodox Jew. He looked like me. He thought like me.
Now that's Rabbi Shmuley Boteach. We're going to be getting your reaction to that and some other sound bites from that roundtable discussion on Scarborough Country on the other side of this break, the last 25 minutes of Issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll hear that one again, plus a couple others, when we come back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.